Welcome to the Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM, or perhaps on one of our greatly appreciated radio syndicates across the country, or maybe find us on the podcast, which you found anywhere podcasts can be found, including now with the Harbinger Media Network. My name is Stefan Hostetter, and I am super excited because today we have a special hour-long radio documentary featuring Housewife, aka Bridget Fry, who will be playing our May 2nd tune-in show at Lula Lounge. Get your tickets if you have not. And we're also joined by music journalist Alex Wolver. Thanks to the two of you being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
So how we're going to structure this is that the first little bit is going to be about, you know, you and your songwriting creative process. Then we'll dive into a couple songs in the middle section. And at the end, we'll circle back to activism and climate pieces. So by way of introduction, Bridget, your bio makes it clear that you sort of have two great passions, music and climate action. How did you get into each and how would you say these influence each other?
Yeah, well, for starters, I would say that I don't consider climate action to be a passion, but more of a necessary thing, I guess. Like, obviously, I meet lots of wonderful people through it, but it's less like an artistic calling and more just like the planet is going up in flames. So I guess that's kind of how I got called into it. My mom has been a climate activist my whole life. And so it's always been something I'm very aware of. And then, yeah, around 18-ish, I kind of realized that there were ways for me to combine. Like, I always knew to a certain extent that music and climate could be really interconnected. But around 18 and 19, I was like, oh, I can do that. And yeah. Once I kind of figured out that there's activism I can do through my music, I was like, all right, great, I'm here. Let's go.
Amazing. So the second half of that was how you got into music. Have you always been a musical human being?
Yes, since day one. I got obsessed with classical music and violin at like 2. And I started begging my parents for a violin. I got one for my 3rd birthday. I wasn't actually physically big enough to play until I was 4. I started taking lessons and it's just been nonstop music since then.
Awesome. And then so I'd be curious to know, you sort of said that you began to realize that you could do activism through your music. How did you begin to do that?
Yeah. So I've always I've played songs at climate rallies and stuff before growing up as a kid, like Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell, or like my first ever like performance in front of a crowd was actually a Greenpeace fundraiser. So that connection has always been there. But then I'm really bad at years, but when the big climate strikes were happening, there's the big one in Toronto. I guess I would have been like 16 or 17 when that happened. And I just like, I went up and I played for these thousands of people. And there's this really cool mobilization of tons of musicians who are also involved in climate. And I found out about this organization called Music Declares Emergency in the UK. And I was there and I was just wanting to work on stuff about that. And so me and my mom started Music Declares Emergency in Canada with a bunch of other amazing artists. And yeah, it just felt like a really natural moment to kind of step in and start that.
Yeah. Do you want to go in a little more in depth on the Music Declares Emergency in Canada? You know, how your participation in it has progressed and how it's been?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, we started Music Declares Emergency Canada in, I think, 2019. Again, I'm really bad at numbers and dates. But yeah, I was kind of following the climate strike. And there's this organization in the UK. They've been doing stuff for a really long time. And basically the mandate for Music Declares Emergency is to encourage musicians to use their platform. So encouraging musicians to talk about climate and like using their platform to encourage people to go to protests, to, you know, get involved and like call their politicians. You know, like that kind of stuff, like a political mobilization, as well as trying to make the music industry more sustainable, like on the back end through the industry side. So talking with venues, talking with labels, all that kind of stuff, and trying to help musicians feel like they're in a place where they can be more sustainable in their own practices as well, with like more like sustainable merch and stuff like that. So it's kind of, we do a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and focus more on the Housewife project. I know it started out as a duo and recently has transitioned to a solo project. And that the difference there really interests me. I wonder how that transition's been for you and how you've been finding it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very, very big difference. But I have always found my process to be very collaborative, and it still is. It's just kind of changed in the way that it's collaborative, I guess. I'm a bit of a control freak. And so now it's kind of, you know, I get to collaborate with people, but everything is like 100% my decision, which is sometimes really daunting and really scary, but also can be really cool and means I feel like, you know, everything I release, I feel like very personally connected to, even though I get to collaborate with all these tons of people. So it's like, yes, technically Housewife is a solo project now, but like, I find that the people I write with and the people I produce with and like my backing band, they're also such a big part of it. So I've definitely described Housewife as like, I'm the head honcho or the main person, but I kind of describe it as anyone who's willing to and happy to collaborate with me. Because yeah, music is, well, can be a super collaborative art form, and that's the way I like to do it. So yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I still don't fully feel like a solo artist.
That's such a interesting, and I really relate to that. Almost all of my projects end up, I need someone else to sort of draw out some things to keep me going, or else I find myself sort of slipping away and failing to get the things done that need to get done.
Yeah, I especially have that on like the, not the artistic side as much, but just the business side. Yeah, but with my most recent song, I Wasn't You, I was posting about it, about, you know, the release, and I was tagging all the people. And this was just the people who were directly involved in the song. And it was like 11 other people. You know what I mean? Like you have like the co-writers and the producers and the mixer and the engineer and the, you know, like the people who helped make the music video and the cover art. And there's so much that goes into it. And it's really cool. I get to work with so many different types of artists as well.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. It gives you sort of a chance to find new different sounds to get to add and play around with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious how that leads to, you know, all of your music has a level of emotionality, and you sort of manage to infuse that into your work. And I'm curious how you approach that, especially as you bring in different artists to partake in it.
I don't know. It's definitely, it can be weird, you know, like I and other people have talked about how, yeah, song, like co-writing, which I do a lot of, I'd say I do like half and half. Most of the songs I've released recently have been co-writes, but it's very weird. You'll go into a room and you haven't met someone before, and you're like, this is the thing that I've been thinking about and that has been emotionally weighing on me. Hello, nice to meet you. Let's write a song about it. And it can be super weird, but I think knowing that I trust all the people who recommend, like, oh, you should work with this person, and set me up with different people. So it's like, I go into that room knowing this person is going to meet me where I'm at. This person's a musician as well. We're going to like find this common thing that we can both kind of think about or write about. And yeah, I just, you know, I want the art to be as good as possible and authentic as possible. And that just means being emotional and vulnerable, which it's also interesting. I've had this conversation recently with a couple different people where it's like, there is always an aspect of truth in my songs. And like, it is always something that is personal to me and I relate to, but I have found maybe I'm like kind of too emotional almost in my songs, and people will be like, ah, this is your personal journal, and everything you say in this is exactly what's going on in your life. And I'm like, well, no, I take some artistic license. So yeah, it can be a good and bad thing, I guess.
Yeah, that's really interesting. One of the things that I often find myself in conversations around storytelling, which is sort of the artistic practice that I have more, is this difference between trying to make something true or factual, that like the goal is always to tell something true, and that might mean you have to make something less perfectly factual to be able,
yes,
to get out the points you're trying to make. You know, like for storytelling, it's often things like, if four different people said different things to you, you can make it one conversation and it will just,
exactly,
make it work better. Like you just have to make it easier, or else you're spend your whole time being like, and then I talked to Bob, and no one cares about that part. They care about the truth you're trying to convey. And so it's interesting that you're experiencing the same thing, but through songwriting.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because I literally was going to say, like, I'm not as much a story writer, but my grandfather's an author. And, you know, my bio dad's a poet, and yeah, it's like weird because I don't think that people ascribe that same idea of you said this, so it must be true to those other art forms. And I find it really interesting with music. But I always take it as a huge compliment when people think that everything I say is something I've really experienced and blah, 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 because, you know, it means that, yeah, I am getting the emotions across and that I have achieved that kind of feeling of authenticity, even if that one line is not actually true.
I think there's something just in music that people connect with it on such a deep, you know, visceral level that it just seems so true to them that it must be. Whereas, you know, there's some critical distance, I think, if you're reading something, or even if you're hearing someone say it, I don't know, something about melody and music, it wins people over for some reason.
And I mean, that's a really good reason why I think it works so well with activism, right? Is that act of winning people over.
Yeah, I really like getting into, to kind of continue this, I really like getting into people's songwriting process. I know like some artists have, you know, 11 a.m. to 12, I'm writing in every day. Or some people just, mm-hmm. you know, it comes along whenever it comes. Do you have any, you know, rules or how do you approach songwriting?
I mean, it's kind of all over the place. I do a lot of writing trips. And when I do a light writing trip, I just collect a bunch of ideas, usually not full ideas, just like a bunch of different phrases and ideas. And I do, like, when I'm on a trip, I buy a new notebook, and that's like my thing. So I have a different notebook for each trip. And I'm really lucky. I, you know, not necessarily everything on those pages will be good, but I feel like I am just like writing enough that I can usually fill one up in one trip, which is like kind of crazy. But yeah, for that, usually I like load my book up with a bunch of starters and then go off and kind of like find what people are vibing with that day and be like, I have this idea. Does that vibe with you? Like, what's the kind of method and mode we're in? And then at home, so that's kind of a structured way, but at home I definitely do music every day without fail, but that can look, I mean, so I have ADHD and I'm 21. And so I'm not the best at having a structure or a good routine. And so, yeah, my writing usually looks like I've had an idea that I've been like kind of kicking around all day. And then like around, you know, I get the like emails and the social media and the cleaning the house out of the way. And then like 7 p.m. I sit down and then, oh, it's 5 a.m. You know, like that kind of stuff. So that's definitely something I need to improve on. But yeah, I mean, I'm just like thinking all the time. My notes app is constantly full. I love notebooks. I like half my bookshelf is notebooks. And yeah, I mean, as I said, my grandfather, it's always so hard when people are like, what's your writing process? And I'm like, there is a billion different directions I can go off talking about that. But yeah, my grandfather and my dad are both writers. So lyrics are always super, super important to me. And that is without fail almost where all my songs start. It's usually like lyrics and then music and melody. Those are kind of interchangeable, which one I come up with first. I think melody is definitely something that comes very naturally to me, but doesn't always come before music, if that makes sense. But just, yeah, doing classical violin, that's a lot of melodic stuff. And so that's kind of where I come from.
Very cool. These are the kind of questions like trying to find the connections and the ways that we are all involved in some version of creative processes. And mm-hmm. I think that for me, I've always just been interesting trying to help just think through the fact that there's not one right one, or even for every individual, you'll go through stages. Like, I'm like you, I have a notes app that just is this never ending. But then I also like have a notebook where if I'm out in the world, I can just like write it down somewhere else. Or if I need to like think something out for longer, mm-hmm. Phone's no good for me because I get distracted. So having a notebook lets me focus on that work exclusively. And that I find helpful.
And it just feels more tangible for me. Like, even when I write something down in my notes app, it will eventually make its way to a notebook. Like, that's just, there's something about the actual physical process that I like, which, you know, in this day and age, I've had people like look at, like, I'll be in, you know, writing sessions with professionals and I'll have their shared Google Docs open and I'll pull out a notebook and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. I like it. I like the tactile feeling.
Yeah, no, I feel you. And so the first song that we will listen to in this first music break will be I Lied. And when we come back, we'll ask you some questions about it, if that's all right.
Great.
Amazing. So this is Housewife. The song is I Lied. And if you want to hear this song, maybe this song, I actually should not, I cannot divulge your set list. But if you want to hear a Housewife perform, you can join us at TuneIn on May 2nd at Lulu Lounge if you're in the city. Take it away.
Jackie thinks you're the one for me, but I'm not convinced yet. Always had this ability to make my own messes, turn friends to exes. Oh, here I go now. It's a control breakdown. I'll make sure you get home safe, but I'm not staying over. Okay, just a little taste, at least until we're sober. All our friends are catching on, 'cause when I said there's nothing going on,
and welcome back to the Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM, or perhaps on one of our greatly appreciated radio syndicates across the country, or perhaps on the podcast found anywhere podcasts can be found, including now with the Harbinger Media Network. If you're just joining us, my name is Stefan Ostetter. We are here with a special hour-long radio documentary with Bridget Fry, aka Housewife, who is playing our May 2nd tune-in show at Lulu Lounge. We are so excited to hear more music like music you just heard. And also, we are joined by music journalist Alex Wolver, who will ask the first question of the second segment, where we're going to dive in a little deeper into some of the songs. Take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Stefan. So we just heard your single, I Lied. And like all of your songs, all your music, that song is really impeccably produced and mixed. So I just wanted to ask how much time you spend, you know, dialing in the perfect guitar tone or the snare tone, or, you know, what's that process for you? How deep in the weeds do you get on that?
It really depends on the song. Depends on if, you know, if I'm the person who made the demo or not, you know, how comfortable I am with the producer. I will say in this one, I Lied, I wrote with Paige Blue and JT Foley in Nashville. And so I was not the person, you know, engineering and producing the demo, I had never taken any allergy medication before until that day. So I actually wrote I Lied while having allergy medication messes with your head. And it was my first time experiencing that. And I was like, whoa. So I don't actually remember tons about the writing process of that song, but production, I produced it with Derek Hoffman in Toronto, who's just an insane, amazing producer. When I'm working with a producer that I really like and I really trust, I'm not super detail oriented, to be perfectly honest. I'm just kind of like all over the place. I'm like, what if we did this and this? And then they kind of, you know, help me shape that. But yeah, working with Derek is always really fun. This one was kind of an interesting process because it went through like a round of changes, which doesn't often happen. You know, this is, again, the idea of just collaborative and like trusting other people you work with. We produced it and I really wanted it to have a pop punk feel. And we went, I think, a little too pop punk. And then like my label and my team were like, whoa, this was supposed to be a pop song. Like, let's bring it back a bit. And then we did. But then it still ends up having some of those elements, like the just like really just in your face guitars. We definitely toned them down, but it's there. And that kind of that fuzzy sense to it. Something I always love is, so in this one, I didn't actually play any of the guitars. I played bass on the song, which is why it has a very simple bass part, because I am not a bass player. But yeah, no, it's, I see producing as like, just like a sandbox, and I'm just kind of there to just like play and experiment. And that's why I trust having, you know, a producer and an engineer in the room who can kind of help me organize my thoughts and stuff. So yeah, with this one, it was kind of, I feel like I was kind of all over the place with it. But it's really interesting that you talk about like the dialing in tones and sound and stuff, because when I play live, I build my backing tracks myself, which means I have to ask the producer to send me stems, so individual, literally every single track in the song. And they just have to send those isolated tracks to me, which is really cool because then I can literally hear every single part of the song separated out when I wasn't the one actually recording every single sound in the song. And that can be really cool. And it's like, yeah, it's like looking at like all the individual threads. And so Derek, who does this song, has a very, very, he puts a lot of little things in and then just layers them and like just like squishes them all together. So there's a lot of stuff in that song that I actually like, you can't necessarily pick out, but then it kind of all sounds really cool when it's like smushed together. That's not very eloquent, but it
is what it was. And therefore
it was what it was. It was really cool. I was like, you know, like I was there for a lot of the production stuff, but then he would go and tinker and add things, and I'd be listening to the stems. I'm like, I didn't even know that was in here. This is great. So it's, you know, it's like, I can be a control freak in some aspects, but then also I'm just like, not a detail person either. So I'm like, sounds good. So yeah, it just depends on the song.
I mean, you know, we're getting into particular sounds and stuff on the song, and there's a reoccurring lead guitar motif in that song, which I really like. And, you know, I think it really pulls the whole song together. And I was wondering how that came to be and how the structure came together.
Yeah, so we had a recurring motif guitar song in the demo that was similar to that, but slightly different. And then I really liked it. And then when we were recording the actual song, I was like, this guitar part is really cool, but it feels a little bit too like, and here is the guitar part. You know what I mean? Like, this is a riff. And so I wanted to just make it a little messier. And so we still kind of kept the rough, like melodic structure of that riff, but like we go to a seventh, it goes like beep, 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 beep. And I love just like any like sevenths and like kind of funky dissonance. Like as much, I like doing as much of that as you can get away with in like radio friendly indie pop song. So that was a lot of fun. And I just love fuzz on everything.
Yeah, you have huge tones abound.
Yes, yes. Give me all the fuzz.
Awesome. So the second song I can't say on air the name of, which is a fun problem. It is the F Around Phase, which people I'm sure can guess what that is, which is a female promiscuity anthem. And At least that's how it sounds. Maybe you will find out from you if that's how you see it. We'll be interested to know. But I mean, given that we continue to see this sort of societal pushback on female sexuality, and especially in the world with no matter how much we try to extricate ourselves from the United States, it's still overwhelming, you know, the overturning of Roe v. Wade and the ways that that has had impacts on millions and millions and millions of women and anyone who gives birth in America. Did you sort of set out to write on this topic for the song, or was it something that you were, what sort of inspired you and why did you want to write the song?
Yeah, it was not my intention to write a female promiscuity anthem. And I mean, I'm glad, like, if that's what people want to take it as, who am I to stop them? You know, I love that. No, it's really funny. It totally has taken on its own life. And like, obviously, to a certain extent, I knew this was going to happen, but I did not realize. So when I wrote the song, when I say brown face, I'm not talking about sleeping around. I'm talking about just being a dumbass and doing and just like having fun with my friends and doing dumb shit and being someone in my 20s, which, you know, an aspect of that is sleeping around, but that is not solely what I was talking about. And it's been really funny to see people take it as that, be like, whoa. And I'm like, all right, well, it's not exactly what I meant. But yeah, I mean, if that's how people want to take it, other than like, you know, it's definitely had some like led to some awkward conversations with like my grandparents and stuff where they're like, your new song. And I'm like, yep. Other than that, though, yeah, I love that that's how people take it. And I just always have to remind people again that, you know, how you interpret a song is not necessarily what the artist meant when writing it, but that's great. And, you know, I always want to, it's funny, I don't think of that song as political, but then I guess, yeah, when you talk about women's bodies or AFAB people's bodies, it inherently becomes political, which I don't think I've ever set out to intentionally write a political song, but there's no way to argue that some of my songs aren't political, like King of Wands, Patrick Bateman, New Girl, to a certain extent, Brown Face. Like, those are all songs that talk about female bodies and like the patriarchy and stuff. And that's not me setting out to intentionally talk about it. That's just my experience, you know what I mean, every day. And so, yeah, there's always a bit of an interesting thing there where I'll write a song and people are like, wow, activism. And I'm like, yes, activism for sure, but also I'm just writing a song. You know what I mean? So I feel like the activism comes out in talking about the song and less like the actual song, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I find it fascinating how swiftly you sort of lose control of your creative work. Like the moment it enters the ether, how people take it ends up mattering so much more than how you originally meant it, or what your purpose of it was, can so quickly be lost into the ether, and then people will pick things up or find other meanings in it, and then that means something to them, as you mentioned. It's like, that's what's I think so beautiful about it, is that people can find these meanings in all these other places. But it is interesting to sort of have to like seed sort of the meaning of your piece a little bit to be like, well, let's see what other how else this plays.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, like I'm happy for that. But I do think it's funny because it's like my friends will be like, oh, you wrote this song about like, you know, being a slut. I'm like, again, support that. Love that. Was not the intention of the song. But yeah, it's so hard to not write politically. It's something that's on my mind constantly. I mean, just bringing up like Roe v. Wade stuff. It's been really weird spending so much time in the U.S. Like I was just in Texas and, you know, like, I grew up in a queer family in a major city. I grew up in a very specific bubble, which was like, obviously, yes, I'm inherently political, but I don't really have to think about like everyday risks associated with that. And then suddenly being in America and being like, oh, there's, you know, like, I mean, I identify as genderqueer, but I'm not a visible, you know, like I'm white and I look like a cis woman, but then like being in America with like my other queer friends who are very obviously queer, it can be a really scary and like kind of like whiplash experience. So yeah, I'm sure there's going to be lots more music about those experiences over the next couple years. There's some stuff I'm writing right now specifically about that kind of idea where like anything about a woman's body becomes political and becomes this kind of subversive thing, which is interesting. It's something I'm very scared about in Canada too. I mean, we have an upcoming federal election, and there's a lot of momentum behind the Conservative Party right now, and that's really, really, really scary as someone whose body is considered political. So yeah, fun stuff. Yeah, but I'm just gonna keep making my songs, and yeah.
I mean, I think these are the times when, you know, music is, and arts in general are more important, more potent than ever, really.
Yeah. And like, it's obviously, I write the songs, blah, blah, blah. I find once I've written them, they can lose a certain level of emotion to it. It's like, you know, once you play it a billion times, and that just like kind of happens. But I do remember we were playing a show in DC, and I had never been in DC, and I like just like been reading a bunch of stuff about Roe v. Wade, and I was just like really, and we ended up playing my song New Girl, which is about, it's not like about reproductive rights or anything, it's about getting catcalled, but I remember playing it, and then I suddenly, like, there's a line, and I was singing it, and I just like growled it, and like my entire band looked at me, and they're like, where did that come from? And I was just like, I don't know, man, I'm just really angry right now, and it kind of came out in the song, and that was like a, yeah, interesting experience. Also, sorry if I'm rambling. I have a habit of it.
Oh, no, please ramble away. So, I mean, let's music nerd out for a second here. Mm-hmm. You know, again, with this song, there's huge guitars, huge bass tones. What pedals are being used?
I'm not sure. I don't know 100%. I think in the recording, there was a Swollen Pickle pedal. I think that's what it's called. It's a fuzz pedal being used. I have one, but it's like not 100% working. But honestly, when I play my shows, it's just a Boss Overdrive. I'm broke. 80% of my pedals, I love pedals, and I'm total tone and pedal nerd. However, I don't really have the money for that. So I make do with a pretty simple setup. And yeah, actually, I don't think any of my pedals I've bought myself. I think they've all been like Christmas gifts and stuff, because that's a real easy like birthday Christmas gift to talk to people about. But yeah, I just use a Boss Overdrive that my dad gave me. The Swollen Pickle is a really cool fuzz pedal, but yeah, I think mine is like broken, so I have to get that fixed. And it can be really interesting and cool then going into the studio and having access to these like crazy pedals that I could not afford, and then having to come home and be like, okay, well, how do I create that sound? Or maybe not that sound on stage, but how do I create the energy that emulates that sound on stage? So yeah, for me, that's a really bassy guitar. My two guitars, I have a Fender Telecaster, which is a bit more twangy, but then my road horse, you know, like my workhorse guitars, this Gretsch I've had since I was 12, it's really bassy, it can get really loud. That with a Boss Overdrive, and I have a like $150 bass practice amp, and I plug my guitar into a bass amp, and it sounds cheap, but that's kind of cool. And it's funny, it's like I'll bring it to shows again just because I'm like broke, and I'm like, all right, well, this is what I have. And then I'll have people come up to me and be like, dude, I love your guitar tone, like, what's that amp you're using? And I'm like, you're not gonna love this answer. But yeah, and I don't know, I think like the fuzz is, so I'm classical violin, but I'm not classically trained or trained at all really on guitar. I've taken guitar lessons on and off here and there, but yeah, I'm not a guitarist by trade. I think I am a songwriter by trade, and then I just happen to play guitar. And so being a girl and kind of being pretty DIY and not trained, I've just kind of decided to lean into the making stuff sound shitty thing. And so it's just kind of been like a partly on purpose thing and partly just a kind of product of my musical abilities, but it's been really fun. It's been like I'll be performing with people who are like professional musicians, and they'll be playing something, I'm like, sounds too good, right? Make it worse. Come on, bring it down. Make it sloppier, which can be really fun. But yeah, and then it's like just like a fun vibe.
Awesome. And so last song that we'll talk about briefly is the new one you just came out called Wasn't You. Can you tell us how it came to be and what the response has been so far and how you feeling about it?
Yeah, Wasn't You is, it's not a super serious song, you know, it's definitely another goofy one. I think my last three, I did King of Wands, which is like a pretty serious political song. And then I was like, all right, and then I Lied, and Wasn't You, which are both just kind of about being in your 20s. Wasn't You specifically is about dating men and how frustrating that can be, especially for me as a queer person. That can be a really weird place to be in, especially it's like I can find someone and I'll be like, I really like you, but you have a lot of stuff to unlearn. And that can be really frustrating. And yeah, just this idea of like, I like you and I'm attracted to you, but like, oh my God, there's still so much you're like emotionally, you cannot communicate your emotions. You know, are like, that. There's just so much stuff where I'm just like, and so I wrote a song about that. My best friend, she calls it a man-hating bisexual song, which it's not hating. It's hating aspects of patriarchy, but you know, if you want to dumb it down, yeah. So it's that's
I was told about. Yeah, my partner told me recently that she knew that we wouldn't have lasted long had I not started going to therapy, which I thought, yeah, probably represents a lot of women experience.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I've had this conversation so many times with so many of my female friends where I'm just like, oh my God, they just need to go to therapy. So men who don't go to therapy who are listening to this, go to therapy. It will make everything so much better. It's not necessarily an easy process, but yes, the therapy is great. Big fan of therapy, specifically men going to therapy.
I think we can all send the men off to think about that expectation, which honestly, I will fully endorse. I'm certain therapy would help everyone, especially those of us who talk about it less. The less you talk about it, the more likely you need it.
I agree.
So we will be back with the final segment where we will be talking to Bridget about activism and its overlapping with art. This has been The Green Majority on CIUT, and the song is Wasn't You by Housewife.
Got my palms red in the center of a friend of a friend's house. You're a skeptic, rolled your eyes and pulled both of your sleeves down. In the low light, holding everyone's attention for ransom. Doesn't matter, cause all the girls think that you're handsome. Tried walking away, I was streetlight blinded. Then you came to find me. Said you saw the psychic and we were meant to be. You make me wanna wring your neck, then take back all the words you said. A face that makes me just forget how much I wish you.
And welcome back to The Green Majority here on CIUT 89.5 FM, or perhaps one of our greatly appreciated radio syndicates across the country, or maybe found us on the podcast, which can be found anywhere podcasts can be found, including now with the Harbinger Media Network. If you're just joining us, my name is Stefan Hostetter. We are here with a special hour-long interview with Bridget Fry, a.k.a. Housewife, who will be playing our May 2nd tune-in show at Lula Lounge. Get your tickets if you have not. What up? Be really fun. And yeah, we're here chatting about art and activism, also joined by Alex Wolver, our music journalist friend. So, Bridget, to start off, that's a small question. What do you think about music's ability to bring about social and political change? Just a little question. Yeah.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best. I think it is one of the best vessels for that. Yeah. Again, I've always known that, like, just growing up, like, you know, I was raised on like Canadian folky music. Well, actually, that's not necessarily true. I was raised on Canadian folk and then like old school punk, which are two genres that I think are like tied into a lot of activism and a lot of politics. So it's something I've always known about, like growing up, Neil Young, Southern Man, Ohio, Gold Rush, just so politics baked into his music. And yeah, we were talking about, I think music really has this ability to call people in and move them that other art forms and other, or just like logic and, you know, telling people about things that factually doesn't have. So it's huge. I've actually been thinking about it recently too, because I was on a panel. We were talking about film and activism and climate stuff too, and how there seems to be a lack of, like, obviously there's lots of documentaries about climate stuff, but a lack of like narrative about climate. And we were talking about how music can kind of find truth and authenticity without actually stating factual stuff. And I think that just becomes this amazing ability to mobilize people for political change.
Yeah, I think there's something, I mean, music being purely auditory is a very intimate thing, which I think inherently increases the connection. And also, I think something to do with the length of a song, you know, it can range from like 3 to 5 minutes. There's just infinite potential with that. Whereas I think something like, you know, visual arts, there's so much effort that goes into it that it just becomes such a big undertaking that for some reason it doesn't seem to be able to get kind of into the nitty-gritty of it. Whereas I don't know what it is about music, it just really connects with people.
I mean, I don't even think it's just music. I think it's, as you said, just audio, and in particular there's something about it. Like recently, I don't remember what I was listening to, but I was just thinking about, for me, the scariest things I've ever heard are like horror podcasts, and that has always scared me way more than any movie, because there's this sense of, you know, you listen to it on your own, or you're having your own personal interpretation and like relationship with it. So that's not just, I think it's, there's just, yeah, something about listening and hearing stuff that's just like really just clicks in.
Yeah. Going back to, yeah, getting involved with activism and things like that, what would you say to people who are perhaps a bit overwhelmed by, you know, the totality of the climate crisis and don't know how they can help or where to start even?
Nothing's too small. It can be super overwhelming, but being overwhelmed isn't going to make a change. Where, you know, just if the way you need to start is by just like making personal changes in your own sustainability life, that's great. Or if it's just going to a protest, that's great. You know, it's just like, I think anything you can do is a start. And I also think people often get bogged down by the idea that to be an activist or to, you know, speak openly about something, they have to be perfect at it. And I don't think that's true. And I think that often bogs down a lot of, this is mostly coming from my experience as a musician. So people who have platforms, they think they cannot talk about climate change unless they live this like perfect zero waste lifestyle. And that is just so not true, because, you know, we live, not to be like, we live in a society, but like we live in a society where like if you want to be perfect, that means you have to not participate in society, right? Like, that's kind of the only way. And so I think a big thing is just to remember, do your best and don't get bogged down on the idea that you have to be perfect at something or know everything about something to be involved and be active on it. And also, like, community is great. I think, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just, like, I can get really bogged down by climate stuff, but then as soon as I go and I join a community of people, it can be so uplifting and so energizing and empowering.
Yeah, for sure. And so I would be curious to one sort of step further than that. One question I asked a lot of people back, I think it was maybe 2 years ago, which it's funny when different feelings start occurring. I remember there was a period of time where for a year, I really felt like folks in the climate movement were struggling. And so I'd ask everyone this question of like, how, when you get overwhelmed, what do you do personally to sort of help yourself move through it? And I got a lot of answers for different people. One of the answers that you just mentioned was community. I got a few times. I'm curious, do you have a practice to sort of bring yourself back into a less overwhelmed state when you start spiraling?
Community is a big one. I also think living in a major city, you can feel really disconnected from the work that you're actually trying to do. And so like not, I don't know, maybe saying reconnect with nature feels a bit like trite or something, but I do genuinely think that it works. Like I've been lucky enough to go to like seminars and stuff on climate activism where it's this combination of community and activism in the mountains or in whatever. And that has been just so like refueling. And obviously that's not everyone has that opportunity and has that option, but just reconnecting in nature in whatever way you can, I do genuinely think really helps. Like, I don't know what it was. I saw something recently about the idea that like any animal when like removed from their natural habitat and like nature gets depressed and like, why don't we kind of acknowledge that it's the same thing for us? You know what I mean? Like a major city is not our natural habitat. And I love living in a big city. There's so many amazing things about it, but that's not humans' natural habitat. And I think we just got to remember that. And, you know, I'm really lucky. I live in a part of the city where I have nature on three sides of me. You know, I live in the West End. So I'm like right by High Park and the lake and all this stuff. And I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah. Even though, you know, you've been active for many years now, you're still quite young. And looking around at environmental and political movements these days, it seems like young people are really leading the way. Why do you think we've left it all up to your generation to have to deal with all of our problems?
I mean, I think there's something to be said about like, obviously people have been talking about climate for hundreds of years, really, but it's been something that's like very actively in the public discourse since I've grown up. And so it's, you know, it's not ever something like people my age, it's not something like anyone under the age of 30, it's not something that they like really have to learn about. It's just like when you know, you're born, you're like climate change is real and the planet is dying. And that's terrifying and really upsetting. And so I think, yeah, it's just, it's always been a truth. And it's not even with climate. I just see my generation just being really fed up with like late stage capitalism and just kind of like how everything's set up and just be like, wow, none of this is fair. And so we've grown up in it. And just in the past 10 years, I think like, especially with like COVID, there's just been increased open discussions about this kind of stuff. And so I think it's always young generations that lead activism to a certain extent. And my generation just happens to be young at this very pivotal time. So, but also like, I was at a climate panel recently and someone said they talked to an older person, like, you know, like in their 60s, who literally was just like, I don't have kids. Why should I care about this? Which is like an insane, like, I'm going to die soon and I don't have kids. Why should I care? Which is like an insane thing to hear. Not just like, oh, that person's bad, but also like, how have we as a people gotten to the point where someone can just openly admit that? That's insane. But yeah, it's like, you know, people my age are starting to think about, oh, not people my age, but people like 5 or 6 years older than me are starting to think about having kids and how terrifying that is. And I think, you know, people are always, there's always going to be a large amount of people who want to have kids and so want to make sure that it's a good world for that. I mean, for me, like, honestly, the biggest part of my activism is I am 14 years older than my sibling. You know what I mean? And so I'm not a parent, but I have a much younger person in my life who I really, really love and I really, really care about. And I just want to make sure that stuff's good for them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say Alex and I, his question made it seem like we're ancient, which I think is very funny. But I would say that as someone who is, I would say, smack dab in the middle of the age where all of your friends start having children, the conversation about climate change is one that you have almost with every single new parent or every parent who's considering it. It's like one of the things that almost everyone around me is currently at least thinking about as part of their consideration. That and whether or not they can afford a second bedroom to have, which, well, you know, which goes back to your point about the intersecting crises and the way we have to deal with it. But I want to go back to something you said a little bit earlier, which was about how there's this pressure as an artist. You can't speak politically unless you're perfect. And that, I think, dovetails really directly with how much you separate art from the artist has become more and more of a thing in the recent, mm-hmm. especially as like, I would say back in the old days, it seemed like artists were just sort of this preeminent class along with the police where they could do whatever they like. And that is breaking down for one of those two groups, which I think is generally a good thing. But
it's breaking out for both.
Yeah, why not both? Why not both? But I can see how that pressure to only want to support sort of the perfect artist also prevents the artist from taking any political stances, especially when I interviewed your mom, as you probably know, a few weeks ago, and one conversation we had was how hard it is to be a climate conscious musician because of how much travel is necessary.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like to be a super successful musician, you have to be traveling everywhere and we don't have high speed rail. So you're probably flying and like flights are 2% of the global emissions in the world, which is the same as all of Canada. And like, that's a really hard thing to square. Like if you cannot survive as an artist without also being a jet setter, that's a really difficult place to create.
Very difficult place to create. Well, first of all, we should get more trains. I mean, I know that's not like, we could just snap our fingers and have more trains, but I love trains so much. And I would be like, straight up, if I could afford it, I would love to travel across Canada in a train. I've done it once before. Mm. Via Rail used to have a program where artists could basically busk on board and then get first class fare for free, which is amazing. So bring back trains.
Very pro-train podcast. Like our show is incredibly pro-train. So you're speaking our language right now.
Literally, me and my best friend, our DMs are constantly just memes about how great trains are. Like straight up, like that's not, love trains.
But are you okay with sitting backwards while the train is going forwards?
Oh, I love it. It's so fun.
I find it a little nauseating personally, but I used to like it.
I don't actually get motion sick on trains, which is, I'm lucky. I feel a lot of guilt about how much I fly. I really do. And if I could afford it, I would not fly so much, but being a musician is really hard financially. And so there are, really cool initiatives. Like a lot of people are just kind of starting to talk about slow touring. Like Tegan and Sarah right now are basically doing a slow tour. Like if you look, they're playing like all these dates just around Southern Ontario, which I think is really, really cool, but also not necessarily feasible for people who don't actually have that many fans in the same market. So it's really difficult. And yeah, I definitely feel a lot of guilt about flying. And I say that, you don't need to be perfect, but then I still feel that pressure on myself as well. So it's a bit, hypocritical, but which I'm not perfect by any means at all, is my point. But I still feel that pressure. It can be really hard. I do think it's been interesting seeing the amount that the arts has to do with politics. Just looking at like Olivia Rodrigo or Taylor Swift and like the effect that they are having on American politics is like insane to me as someone who tries not to buy into like the cults of celebrity. But people are just so fed up with their politicians. And when you have politicians acting like idiots, you're going to turn to someone else to get your influence from and try to make change. And so you see these, who's the next person who has a platform is, this pop star. So it's kind of insane, but it makes a lot of sense, I think, the kind of climate that we're in right now. Yeah,
it's tough. Hard. Yeah, fair. Yeah. I mean, I find that so interesting, that point you just made there, which is sort of like that leaders will emerge regardless of what we do. It's not like humans will look for people to congregate around and find some type of connection with, and who that is and why and how is a little bit arbitrary. You know, like what I find fascinating, this is a complete aside, but I think it relates, is like what specific sports are really big in different countries. Like one of my favorite weird stories was how in the 2010 Vancouver Olympics, the best downhill skier, I think it was, from Norway, was like, Norway loves skiing so much. This guy was the thing. He was the biggest thing ever. He comes to Vancouver, is like flocked by fans, thinks it's normal, starts signing his name until he discovers that everyone just thought he was Sidney Crosby because he just looks a lot like Sidney Crosby.
Right.
And yeah, and of course, like, no one in Canada knows who the best Norwegian skater is.
Why would
but
they?
Like, but each society will create different sets of people who sort of become the cachet and the culture carriers. And,
sure.
And here we have, obviously, you know, I think the way that artists have emerged, especially musicians, more than almost any other, you know,
yeah,
where no one's really looking at visual artists or even novelists to the same level of cachet. There's maybe two that even come close, but no one comes to the same level of cachet as, you know, as a Taylor Swift in really any other medium whatsoever.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
And so we'll end this with sort of a combo two-part question.
Great.
Which is, first, just how folks can follow along with your work. And second, we always give the last thought to the show to our guests. So if you have anything you want to leave our listeners with at the end of this, you can. But before I do, I just want to say that this has been our special hour-long documentary with Housewife, aka Bridget Fry. If you want to hear their music, you can join us at TuneIn on May 2nd at the Lula Lounge. Tickets are available at greenmajority.ca/tunein. Bridget, your last thoughts, and how can folks hear all your music?
Yeah, you can hear all my music. I'm on all the social media places at housewife_band. And, you know, I will be releasing new stuff. There is new music. And a final thought. Oh, boy. That is no pressure. I don't know. Now I'm just going to like goofy thoughts in my head, really. Go to more live music, I guess. And get involved in your community. The TuneIn is an exciting initiative, and I love the Lula Lounge. And yeah, go support independent artists. That's my final thought. It's not easy.